We love cake so much we decided to make it a full-time business. For me, Sammy.
And me, Bronya.
Join us on our journey of discovery as we meet fellow cake professionals, artisan cake makers and home bakers who will give tips and advice on the Business of Cake Making podcast, glitter included.
Follow us on Instagram and listen to us on Spotify, iTunes, Podbean or wherever you listen to your podcast. Sign up to our newsletter and visit the blog at daisycakecompany.co.uk.
Hello. Hello, everybody. So I was lucky enough to attend a conference last year where Gotterby Marketing Agency did a talk about diversity within your business. And Bronya and I really thought this was a topic that we needed to talk about. But whilst compiling the podcast, we really felt an expert would be able to answer our questions with much more clarity than we could. So we are lucky enough to have Martin from Gotterby, who will be answering questions today about diversity and inclusion within a small business. Hello, Martin. Thank you for coming along today.
Hello, guys. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. We know you're from Gotterby, but would you be able to tell us a little about the company and about your role as client services director?
Yeah, of course I can. So Gotterby for 16 years now, we've been helping brands across the UK connect with the 14.6 million people in the UK that come from an ethnic minority background. So how we do that is by deeply understanding audiences and what makes them different. So as many people know, we're all shaped by our background. And for those that come from an ethnic minority background, that is very different, both about how they consume media, but equally what kind of motivates them and the behaviours that they show as well. So we've worked with some really great brands and are doing some really kind of cool work in that space as well.
Excellent, excellent. So, see the first word I say and I cough, look at that. Right. So jumping straight in, please can you share with us what diversity, equality and inclusion means to you?
Yeah, of course. So generally what I do is I split each of those words out and look at the meaning of them individually. So for me, kind of diversity and inclusion are the kind of ones that are probably a bit more fluffy than anything for me. Mm-hmm. And the real hard hitter is equality or rather equity. So for me, diversity is just about making sure people from minority communities are visible and that we give them a voice. So I think there's two really important things here, is to ensure that we're not being performative with that. So the example that I always use from a marketing perspective is the Dove campaigns, where you see a kind of smorgasbord of colours of skins, colours and tones of skins, that is quite kind of, look, here you go, here's everyone. So it's avoiding that kind of performative nature. And then I guess the real kind of value of diversity for businesses is having that diversity of thought. So yes, from ethnicity perspective, but equally from lots of other different walks of life, what that allows businesses to do is think about problems in completely different ways. So we see it in our own business. Whenever we have a problem to solve, lots of different people will come up with different solutions based on their background. And as I mentioned, that may be ethnicity or that may be something else. And I guess then inclusion is that piece I mentioned in diversity, but then developing that. It's about ensuring everybody has a voice and that that voice is heard. And I mean, that's a really important thing, especially for businesses, is that those voices are being heard and listened to and that that person is able to understand that they are being heard and that something's happening based off what they've said. And I'm sure we can go into that with a couple of questions later as well. And then the last one, equality and equity. So I always talk about equity more than equality, because I think it's a lot more important and poignant than equality. So to separate the difference, because some people don't know, equality is giving everybody the same thing.
Yeah.
Equity is giving everybody what they want based on their circumstances.
Right.
So the best way to give the example is the example that I always give is, Bronya, what size are your shoe?
Seven.
Seven, right. So if me and you were to have a race, and I gave us both size 10 shoes,
right,
you wouldn't be very good with them, would you? Because they wouldn't.
It would be a big so mess.
Exactly. So that's equality. So that's right. Giving us both the same shoes.
Yeah.
But if we were to run the race and we were to use equity, I would give you size 7 and I would have size 10. And right. Then that would be a fair race.
That makes perfect sense. Perfect sense.
That's,
yes.
That's the real differentiator that I use for everybody when you're kind of talking about the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found when I was putting the questions together that equity and equality, equity is being used as much as equality now. So it's like that word is becoming a better description,
yeah.
Really, as you just said.
Yeah.
Do you feel diversity and inclusion in the workplace is becoming something that all businesses are including within their working practices now?
I think it's definitely something that all businesses, no matter what shape, size, should be including in their business practices. Many are taking it up and using it performatively. So they'll write an EDI policy and it will sit in a cupboard somewhere or in a handbook somewhere and read it for the next 5 years kind of thing. And again, we'll go on to those kind of things. But I think it's definitely something that companies should be focusing on. As if you look from a point of view of society, we are becoming more and more diverse.
Yeah.
So I'll hit you with some stats, because I always stare at census data. so it's just part of my job, yeah. Really, to look at census.
We don't judge.
It sounds boring, but, you know, it's that between the last two census reports, we've become about 10 to 12% more diverse as a country. So the white population has gone down by about 10 to 12%. Everything else is coming up.
Right.
So particularly if you look at the Black or Afro-Caribbean community, between the 2011 census and the 2021 census, that community doubled in size in the UK.
Gosh,
so wow. That's in
5 years, doubled in size.
That's fantastic.
That is really interesting, that's like cold, hard facts.
Exactly. And that's why, as businesses, we need to be paying attention to it more, because, like say, cold, hard facts, in order to reflect society, we need to be thinking about the other people that make up our society versus 10 years ago and how that's changed.
Yeah. And I suppose, I mean, some people see it more than us, because I live in Surrey. I live in North Surrey. I live in Epsom, but we are like literally on the boundary of London, and going into London, you see a huge diversity. Whereas then when I lived in Winchester, the diversity was much smaller. So not everyone is aware, are they, of like how things are changing, because everyone's little world is different, isn't it, you know?
Yeah absolutely, and it's a good point. I'll bang on about my census data again. So obviously areas of the UK, there are areas of the UK where based on the last census information, where actually people from a white ethnic background make up less than 20% even of the population of that city. So as you mentioned, it really depends on your environment.
Yeah.
And where how exposed to that you are as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Because you're based in Southampton, aren't you?
Yeah, we're based in Southampton.
So am I. I'm just up the road from you.
I could tell from your accent you were Southampton.
I always get to Essex normally, but there you go.
I was born and bred in Southampton. I recognise that accent anywhere.
Well, actually, technically, I was born in Dorchester. So it was a little bit more country than that. But that was only the first kind of 5 years of my life. So that's kind of been beaten out.
So how can we build diversity into our businesses? Because many of us, many cake makers are sole traders. We work alone. Whilst we advertise to the greater public as such, we are we're not employing people. We don't have people to bounce off of. So how can we build it into our businesses?
Yeah, I think the first thing, I guess, goes to the point that we just mentioned is being aware of the environment around you. And like you said there, the people that you're serving. I think diversity doesn't necessarily have to be about ethnicity either. It can be about kind of the place of thought that you come from, could be about religion, it could be anything. And that's really important to have that inputting into your business as well. So I think getting feedback from lots of different people from diverse backgrounds can really help from that perspective as well. Wherever you can get kind of advice, mentorship, consultants working with you to kind of give that. Mm-hmm. I think there's always this kind of, for me, as I mentioned, diversity is about diversity of thought more than equally it is about being diverse based on your ethnic background. So wherever you can have that kind of input into your business, then that can help, because ultimately, if it's just somebody with the exact same background as you, when you look at a problem, you're going to come out with exactly the same outcome.
That's
not helpful to how businesses grow either.
So we need to make our businesses adopt a sense of inclusion, belonging and equity on a daily basis. But how can we go about doing that?
I think, first of all, it's about establishing that clear kind of policy and boundary. So what is it that those things mean to you as a company? And then communicating that. And it sounds so simple, but writing that down.
Yeah.
And even the process of you having to write that down and say, this is what it looks like, is kind of the first step of this is what it means to us. This is why it's important to us. And kind of setting those kind of boundaries, limitations, things like that. Because then you've always got something to kind of refer back to draw people to. If you are hiring, then you can point them to them, you can educate them about that. And it kind of all then bounces from that into your hiring practices, as I mentioned. And then equally, any kind of training and educational opportunities that you provide or look for, they can all be based on that kind of the essence of that definition that you've created. And one of the things that me and my team are always kind of really hot on is creating a really clear feedback loop with that as well.
Okay.
So actually, as I mentioned, a lot of people will do the tick box exercise of, okay, cool, I've got a policy in place, I've got definitions in place, like I've done a really good job. They'll pat themselves on the back, they'll feel good about themselves. But actually, it's coming back to that, because your business is ever evolving. As I mentioned, the society around you is ever evolving. So that policy and those definitions need to ever evolve with that as well. Mm-hmm. So it's looking back at that feedback mechanism and creating kind of just that improvement loop, really. Right.
Interesting. I never thought about that, because it's it is a two-way thing, and it is an ever-growing problem. Or not, it's an ever, like you say, with the census, how that has grown and how that has changed, and we see how diversity is changing. To go back and to readdress it every so often to make sure that what you're doing is you're keeping to what you're saying, or do you need to change it? Do you need to grow in any way? Yeah.
Yeah.
So how should we go about showing? So we decide what our equal opportunities and diversity policy is going to be. How do we go about showing that? Because I know I used to have, so it was me on my own, and I used to have like a little bit on my website about, I will make cakes for anyone type of thing, that kind of thing. But it was just like this little thing. So how do we go about showing people outwardly that this is something that we have?
Yeah. So I think simply making it available, the step that you mentioned there is absolutely the first step. And then I think it's making that true in everything that you do as well, and making, you don't want to border on, look, we're doing this and it's that kind of straight piece. You want it to be visible. I always challenge clients when they kind of say, oh, this feels a bit performative, or are we going to look performative? I have one particular client that will go unnamed at this stage, that always has a fear because anytime they do anything, it gets battered by press for being performative. But ultimately, they are making that step. And then it goes back to that feedback loop of, okay, well, maybe I'm always going to get bad press because I'm going to get bad press because they get bad press for whatever reason. But at least then you know you can kind of make that difference and you've made that impact as well.
Yeah.
So I think making that available and making it apparent to the people that you work with and work for, that is something that you feel is important, and that they can kind of get on board with as well. And then I think it's about kind of ensuring that you build that into your hiring process. I know you mentioned kind of working alone, but equally whenever you do get to the point where there is opportunity to work with others, whether that's directly or indirectly, it's about making part of that as your part of your onboarding process. It's to be as much a part of the culture of a business as it having a drinks fridge in your breakout room, or sitting a bunch of awards here or whatever.
I suppose, I mean, because although a lot of us don't employ people, but we don't work in isolation either. So as a wedding, as a wedding supplier, there will be lots of other wedding suppliers that we will work in amongst. So it's just making sure that everyone knows where we are on, within that group of suppliers that we, because you get recommendations and referrals from other suppliers, and knowing that you're getting referrals and recommendations from like-minded individuals, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one of those things where it's something that, as we mentioned at the beginning, it's something that every business should be doing. It's some that some are doing better than others. Now, I'm not saying do it for a competitive advantage, because then you're doing it for the wrong reason. But I think if you can do it, live it, and showcase it, then you don't really need to shout about it. You just need to kind of do it, and it's seen. And that's ultimately the best kind of advocacy you can give for it, is actually just doing it and letting it be seen by people, and really kind of living the words that you speak,
I agree with what you've said then. just do it gently. It's much better. What should or shouldn't be in our diversity policy?
Yeah, I think the scope of what can be in your diversity policy is massive, and there's loads of useful pieces online that will help you build it out, free tools that will help you build it out and things like that. But I think you should really use them to grasp a kind of template, almost like a skeleton, for that, and then really put what you want over the top of it. So things that you should really think about are things like kind of talking about the scope and purpose. So again, like I mentioned, what is diversity, equity, inclusion to you and to your business? And why is it important to you and your business? Obviously, you can look at things like equal opportunity, non-discrimination, those things kind of accessibility and accommodation, those kind of things need to be key to it. I think any really good diversity, equity, inclusion policy includes details of how you train and educate around those areas, and equally who it is that's accountable to the policy, but equally the evaluation of that, so that you can really showcase, right, this is what we're doing, this is the person that is really spearheading this, and actually this is how we're kind of showing that we're evaluating and continuously improving as well. And I think really, other than those kind of few really important things, it's about making it true to yourself and making it true to what these things mean to you as a business and the reason why it's important to you as a business as well. Because as I mentioned, if you force yourself to write these things down, then you force yourself to be accountable for those things that you say it is. So that then really kind of builds the backbone of it and keeps you accountable. That's what it's for, really, I guess.
Yeah. Do like a good policy like that, actually. Don't like all policies, but that kind of policy. Accountability is always a good thing. Always a good thing. So obviously, other than living and breathing our diversity policies and equal opportunities, where should we be putting this that other people can see it? You know, so what, should we be publishing it anywhere? So other people, if they have a problem or they have a concern about who they're hiring to make their cakes, so they can see that, you know, this is what we're trying to offer to people.
Yeah, definitely. So as you mentioned, company websites kind of through and through, easily done. Things like if you're working with suppliers, if you're working in networks, things like that, one of the things you simply can do is gather all their emails up and go, by the way, we've evaluated our diversity, equity and inclusion policy. Here's the latest policy. If you've got any questions, ask us.
Right.
We have a bunch of policies like that that we actually put on our onboarding forms.
Okay.
So actually, when we sign a new client, we say, look, these are all the things that we stand for. If you want to have a read, then here they are. Because for us, especially something like this, is really key to things that we do and the work that we deliver. So we want to be really clear with people from the outset that actually, these are the things that are really important to us. Have a look through them. That kind of reinforces that straight away as well for us.
Because, I mean, we often say, I mean, we sort of like talk to cake makers and we say, you know, when you're sending out invoices, always make sure you send out terms and conditions. So it can almost go into your terms and conditions.
Put a link with it there.
Yeah, to just highlight it.
These things are literally as important as your terms and conditions. Obviously, you've got things like modern slavery and stuff like that as well that are kind of equally you want all of your suppliers to know about and are key to who you are as a business and who you are as an employer and who you are as a contractor. So
yeah,
they're important things that you can input in at those points as well.
And I think as it's becoming, people are becoming more and more aware of these things, people are actually looking out for contractors and for suppliers that are, you know, are doing this kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It goes back to what I said at the start in terms of everybody should be doing it.
Yeah.
And I think that's becoming the expectation and the norm at the moment, is everybody should be doing this. And then soon you won't be measured on if you're doing it, you'll be measured on how well you're doing it.
Yeah.
Because everybody's doing it.
Yeah.
Mm. What role does language play in multicultural communications?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, the UK is becoming more and more diverse. So it's really important that people are being communicated in a way that's easy for them to understand. If English isn't your first language, then it's much easier to understand something if it comes in your native language, whatever that may be. And I think you can definitely take pieces from that when we're talking about the things that we've talked about as well, is it's understanding what is different about a person and therefore how can I make your experience easier as an output. So one of the really kind of important pieces of work that we did previously was we worked on a vaccinations campaign for the NHS. So as we all know, during COVID-19, there were certain people from minority ethnic backgrounds that didn't want to take the vaccine because they were scared of certain things didn't feel it was as available to them because they didn't have the information about where to go and get it or anything like that. So a lot of that communications we actually translated and gave to them, because it's just a way of ensuring that they have it in a way that's accessible for them.
Yeah.
And I think that's a key, part of understanding and shaping diversity, equity and inclusion policies as well, is ensuring that everything is accessible to you given whatever background you might come from, whether that's language or whether that's anything else.
Another thing, it actually, because as you can see, I have a rather unusual name for a middle-aged white woman from Winchester, Southampton area. I have a very unusual name. What I would find is when I used to work in Hackney in East London, and no one ever got my name wrong. Not once did anyone, because there was such a diversity of names and languages, everyone always got my name right. When I had my shop in Romsey in Hampshire, no one got my name right because it was unusual and it wasn't something. And, you know, and I never got offended. It wasn't until it repeatedly happened that I used to think, why can't someone just learn my name? It's not hard. It's not a difficult name. It's just something you don't know. And that's when I became very aware. I think, obviously, you know, in my life, I've never come across any anything that I've sort of like any barriers, but all of a sudden not being able to say your name, it's like, just make the effort, please. You know, and I can see on a bigger scale.
I think that's a really nice point as well, because we always discuss in the office is making a point of making people feel like you're making an effort with them.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've since starting here have always taught myself to do is if I speak to someone where I'm not clear on how to pronounce their name, is actually just ask them straight up, like, I really want to get pronouncing your name correct. Can you just tell me how I would say your name?
Yeah.
And I think so many of us like shy away from that kind of thing just for embarrassment. But actually, you kind of got to stop thinking about yourself and rather think about the other person and kind of, well, actually, it's going to be much less embarrassing if I just fess up and say, look, how do I say your name? Because it's not familiar to me. I'd love to be able to kind of say it properly so that I can make you included.
Because it is,
I've kind of experienced that as well, because I used to have two Slovakian friends and they both changed their names to English names so that they have to go through.
Hey, that's who you are. Yeah. That's really sad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I work at a church and they have a Chinese congregation. And all, so we have a few of them volunteering with us and they're all called things like Vivian and Tracy. And it's like, I know that's not your real name. And I always say to them, what is your real name? Can I learn who you know, because it is your identity. It's who you are, isn't it? You know? Interesting. Yeah. right. So how do cultural nuances impact the development and education of marketing strategies across different demographics?
So I think it goes back to what I said right at the start, really, is somebody's culture background shapes who they are as a person, and really developing that into marketing strategies. It is no different for marketing people. All we have to do is understand what is different about the individual that makes them behave or motivate, or about where they're searching for things and things like that. So with that understanding, we can then develop kind of ways of reaching people, and ways of talking to people from different kind of cultural backgrounds or ethnic backgrounds that really enables us to, I guess, our main job is understanding people at a really deep level so that we know that we're talking to that person specifically. And that's no different to the things that we've spoken about throughout this. Everything that we do from a kind of marketing point of view is exactly what you can apply to your business from a kind of policies point of view, because all we do really is, it sounds really fancy and it sounds really funny, it sounds really cool, but all we really do is take the time and effort to understand people.
Right.
And that kind of all my job is really understanding people. And then through understanding people, I know that I can get this product or service or this bit of communications in front of you because I know what makes you tick. I know how you consume media. So I'll give a bit of context and I'll go back to giving data again to give that context. So if you look at the Black and Afro-Caribbean diaspora community in the UK, they are 103% more likely to discover a brand for a music streaming platform.
Wow.
So basically, you know that if I want to target that audience, I'm more likely to be able to get someone from that audience to discover a brand if I target them on a music streaming platform.
Interesting.
So
yeah,
for us, that's kind of part and parcel. Okay, cool. I take audience. I know where they're discovering brands, and then I put the brand there.
Yeah, that is interesting. So it's about understanding your audience rather than just making big assumptions about it, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that it, I'd love to sound really clever and everything like that.
No, you are. You
really are. there we go. That's what I wanted. But really, it's really basic. And it's exactly the same as when you're creating any type of policy or want to do anything in this space for your business from more of a kind of CSR point of view, is it is literally just understanding who you're talking to or who you want to talk to and molding around that to help that person out.
Perfect. Wonderful.
Finally, what are the key changes businesses must make to become more inclusive?
Yeah, so I think the key things that all businesses need to kind of keep in mind and understand is setting clear boundaries. So this is what we do, this is what we stand for. Keeping people accountable based off those boundaries. Yeah. So if somebody slips those boundaries, then you keep everybody accountable to this. So this is really important, is that as businesses, we address behaviors rather than individuals. Singling someone out doesn't work. You have to say, okay, something bad happened. Now everybody needs to learn that this is the way we behave, not like this. And then kind of developing training and learning around that. So if I don't understand something, let's go and learn it. One of the key things that everybody should go and do off the back of this is an unconscious bias test. So you can do them. There's loads of that are free online, and it will basically tell you where your unconscious biases lie. They're called unconscious biases because we're not aware of them. But do one of these tests, then you can become aware of them and you can address them and do that kind of learning to address them as well. And then the final thing that all businesses should be doing is kind of continuously learning from there and continuously developing everything that you do. As we've kind of mentioned and kind of highlighted, I guess, is that in those 10 years difference, society's changed a lot. If yours hasn't,
If
yours hasn't changed the same amount as that, then you're behind, essentially.
Is it funny, unconscious bias, that's a word that we've heard a lot this week with Donald Trump going into the Donald Trump jury. I still can't understand how that's going to happen anyway. But it's like that, it's a word that I've heard so often, unconscious bias, in this just like past week. We've all got them.
We shouldn't be afraid of them, but the more we know about where they lie, then the more you can learn about how to overcome them as well.
Don't be scared of you, because it's all part of you as well, isn't it? That's your background. So thank you so much for coming and chatting to us. We were worried about dealing with this ourselves because we knew that we'd trip over it, so it's really nice to have an expert on to talk about it, so thank you very, very much.
And you knew your stuff. With statistics.
Gotta love a stat.
I'm the numbers man here, Sammy, so.
Good.
Right, so where can we find Gotta Be, and what is your website and your socials for our listeners to go and have a look and get in touch if they want to?
Yeah, of course. So it's gottabemarketing.co.uk. Is our kind of main brand. How we work is we've got two brands. So the brand that deals with this side of what we do is equally called gottabeethnic.co.uk. And then socials are just Gotta Be Marketing, and everything's on there. If you go to the gottabeethnic.co.uk website, there's loads of useful resources on there around kind of different audiences.
Yeah, there are because I watched, I think there's videos on there, aren't there, as well? I watched some of those.
Like conferences that we've done in the past. The really interesting one that we do every year that gets a really good response is the Ethnic Marketing Calendar. So it highlights all the dates through the year that there are significant ethnic and cultural events.
That's interesting.
I guess that can help feed into a lot of what we've talked about as well. Obviously, we've just had the end of Ramadan, so Eid, which is through Vaisakhi as well. And then we've got a number of kind of upcoming celebrations from different cultures and religions and things like that as well.
Because we love a celebration of cake making.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah. I've just done some Eid cupcakes, actually. Is there a national week as well, a national awareness week? Or am I thinking
So you've got loads across the year. So you've got South Asian Heritage Month. There's obviously Black History Month. And there's loads throughout the year. All of them will be on that resource as well that's available.
Amazing. I will look that up and I will put that in the show notes so people can go and check that out. So, yeah, I think that'd be great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Nice to meet you.
Yes, it's been great, actually. I can't really think of a better word.
I was really nervous about doing this podcast, but it was like I just really wanted to do it.
So we knew we had to do it, and I'm really pleased we have. And I will definitely go and do a lot more reading about it from your website as well. So, thank you very, very much.
Lovely. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We were saying that it was an episode that we really, really, really wanted to do, but we didn't want to trip over ourselves and do it badly.
No, definitely.
So it was very lovely to have Martin.
Yes, and he was such a nice chap.
Yeah, such a nice bloke.
Yeah.
But yeah, I know that we would have been really worried if it was just the two of us.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have an expert. And I hope you've all learned something. I think I have. And I used to have like something like a little bit of blurb on my website a few years back, but I think it should be deeper and more in-depth now.
Definitely.
And it should go out with terms and conditions. I think that's a very good idea.
Yeah. I like that idea.
Yeah. Because we all send out the terms and conditions. We'll send out our invoice, and it's like, and the more people that know.
On Bake Diary, they have to accept it.
Oh, so they have to have read it or looked at it, opened it.
Yeah. So that if they've scrolled through, they'll see that.
And I think the more people that become aware that you are conscious of this, the more you will get known as someone that you are conscious of being, you know, doing things as unbiased as possible.
Because a lot of my clients are multicultural. I've got a wide range.
Yeah.
And my family are neurodivergent.
Yeah.
And LGBTQ+ as well.
Yeah, so you kind of live that. You live it anyway because you very much, because it's very close to you, a lot of it.
Yeah, definitely.
But I tend not to, but I think with like my other job as such, that's quite neurodivergent at times.
And educating older people as well.
Yes. That's hard work.
Not necessarily pointing out what they've said is wrong because they think that's right, but re-educating them so that they understand what they've said.
Yeah, and understand why it could be offensive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah. But no, I'm really pleased we've done this episode. Really, really pleased. So thank you for coming.
Yes.
It was a good guest.
Yeah. I'm so pleased.
Yes.
Right. I'm going to go straight into it's time for product of the week, product of the week, product of the week. There you go. Some clapping this week.
Okay. I think you're first this week.
I am just going to get my trusty phone and open my link. So, as you know, Couture have brought out a new paste, or they've updated their paste.
I was just about to go, have they? Sorry. So, I didn't know that, but okay. They've updated their recipe, have they?
Yeah, they've kind of pimped it.
Oh, okay. Which is one of those things that we all sit there and go, oh, no, they've updated their recipe. What's going to be like?
I love if I've said it wrong and that it's not been updated, but the packaging has changed.
I'm sure I have heard on the grapevine, actually, that it has been updated, yes.
Couture is the luxury quality sugar paste everyone is talking about. So I decided to do something a bit different because I normally buy the 2.5 kilogram packs. Mm-hmm. I bought the Sullivan kilogram tub. So it comes in a big block in a tub.
I've had the sugar paste in the big tubs and you have to turn them over and lift the tub off.
Yeah.
And cut off
what you wanted.
Yeah. But it is handy because those tubs, you can use them for all sorts of things.
Yeah, that's because I'm moving in the future. Why I specifically bought it because I thought, oh, that would be handy to carry stuff in. But I have used it and I love it.
It's good.
I've always loved couture anyway. It's my favourite, but it just feels really smooth. It smells good. It's kind of stretchy. I covered a board. I don't cover boards in couture.
No, usually you should.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
But I thought I'm doing a special cake tomorrow.
Right.
So I pushed the boat out and I coloured it, mm-hmm. and it looks really lovely. It's smooth. It just
How
went
does it
on
taste?
Nicely.
Because I know you would have
it.
Eaten it.
I haven't.
No. That surprises me.
Yeah, normally I'd be like, blah, blah, blah. No, I've been, I've
Can
had
you remember
a busy
that
morning.
White chocolate sugar paste we used
oh,
to buy?
No. Just don't even get that in my house because no.
And the other one that is really delicious is the Karen Davis marshmallow.
Oh my
don't
God.
Don't buy it because you will.
Yeah. We had that at the cake and bake show, didn't we?
Yeah, yes. So tasty.
It's not overstretchy, but I thought it had a nice elastic feel to it.
Right.
So it won't droop or tear on deeper or large cakes or multi-tiered cakes. It's suitable for covering and modelling add Tylo powder or gum track for a lovely flower modelling paste. Now, I haven't tried that, actually, but they're saying you can.
Yeah.
It's important to knead it well, but that's the same as with any paste.
Yeah. I mean, the sugar paste, I have to put it in the microwave for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, not 10 minutes, I have 10 seconds before I can even begin to knead it.
Yeah. So the recommended retail price is $44.99.
Is that for the 7 kilo?
Yeah. So I've got a trader's account, so I get a little bit cheaper. But I loved it.
Good.
And I've got a wedding cake coming up and I'm saving it for that.
It is nice when you've got a big tub of it as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, you feel like, yeah, I've got loads of sugar paste. Yeah. I'm all right. None of this. Oh, crap, I've run out.
Yeah, blinking, it's all being used.
Oh, where's... And when you open the cupboard, you're like, yeah, I've got... Oh, my God, I haven't.
The problem is that with it being in a tub, you can't see how little you've got.
Oh, I've been using it as a doorstop.
Oh, so when your door shuts because it's not heavy enough anymore,
yeah,
you know you've run out.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
And it's got a handle.
That's excellent. I've actually got one because, like I say, I had the sugar paste, and so I use another tub for all my coloured bits and pieces.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Because it
idea.
Seals really well, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
It's got a really good
yeah.
seal. So I've got yeah. lots of bits and pieces in plastic bags in another tub.
Mm.
And then they stack.
Mm. I'm hoping not to use that much space up.
Okay, sorry.
Space is very important. Don't clutter, says she who likes to clutter.
I was going
to
say, if anyone knows Sammy, that statement, don't clutter, they know how ridiculous that is.
Well, I'm moving, obviously,
yeah.
and I
You're
did
downsizing.
My, yeah, I'm downsizing. So I did my shoes the other day.
Oh.
So I have one suitcase full of shoes, one bag to go to Clothes Swap, and one bag to go to the recycling. So that's how many shoes I had. And I've just got a bag on my bed that I had delivered this morning with boots in it.
You had delivered?
Yes, I got some vintage, they're secondhand. But I'm looking at them thinking, oh, I've got to pack those now.
That's so funny. Yeah, Sammy, although you don't hoard, do you? You're
no.
quite happy to pass it through and give it
oh,
to
yeah,
the next
yeah,
person.
Yeah. 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 But I hadn't done my shoes for a while. I'm going to do my clothes at some point as well. Just got to get my big suitcase back from my friend so that
and
I
you can do that.
Yeah.
Oh, the joys of packing. What fun.
Mm.
Have you packed all your cake stuff yet? Or is that just that last
no.
minute?
No. I'm kind of working my way down. So I've kind of done most of the upstairs.
Yeah.
So then I think I'm going to do that room last.
Well, the thing is it because you'll be using it as well, won't you?
Yeah, yeah.
So you can't be packing it and then be
yeah,
going,
I'm trying
such
not. I'm trying not to buy stuff as well, which is quite hard.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to run down the, everything that I've got.
Yeah. Good luck. Right. So my product this week is something that I've been using a lot recently. And I actually showed it on my Instagram the other day, on my Instagram stories, is my stacking cooling rack.
Ooh.
So you know when you've got a wire rack when these are all the, shop actually. You know you get the, your wire rack when you get your cakes out of the oven.
And
you've
got all
So I've got two lots of stacking ones. So they stack three high.
Yeah.
And I can put one stack on top of it, so they can stack six high, actually. Because when you're in a small kitchen like what I am here, space is of the premium. So I stack my cooling racks right up. And yeah, I've just, I think one I bought from Lidl years and years ago, one my mum bought me, one stack, one set my mum bought me. So mine are, I don't know, how many years old? Years and years and years old. But I have looked them up. And if you go to the cake decorating company, you can buy a set of three for about $10.95. Or if you go to Amazon, they're about between £10 and £15 for a stack of three. But yeah, they save space.
Yeah, I use mine a lot.
Do
cupcakes, you can put cupcakes on them.
Yeah.
You can, if you're making lots of decorations, you can stack them up.
I love them.
Lots of if you're doing baking lots of wedding cakes.
Yeah. You put all your layers. And that's the thing, is because I've been doing stuff for the shed. So I've kind of do on a Monday or Tuesday, I do lots of baking. So I've got lots of layers coming out. And I'm like, well, I haven't got room to put them everywhere. So stack them all up. And then there they are.
Yeah.
So if you've got a small kitchen and you need to cool a lot of stuff down, stacking cooling racks, worth it.
Yeah. That's me.
Right. We did have. And you have answered this lady.
Yes.
Okay. But I think because, so this is a lady called Cake Expressions by Lisa. And she messaged about our episode last week. And I thought, well, if she's wondering this, then other people can wonder it. So maybe we'll talk about it now. She said, hi, ladies. I've been meaning to message for months simply to tell you how much I love your podcast. I never used to listen to any podcast, but after binging your entire catalogue, I can't wait for new episodes to be released. You've made me laugh out loud so many times to count. My husband wonders what is going on in my shop since I work alone. Anyway, after today's episode, I had to take a minute to message you about your product of the week, Sammy. You mentioned Bake Diary. I've heard of it, but thought it was just another fluff product. Let me tell you, I've been using QuickBooks for over 20 years, but had to switch to an online version 18 months ago. Very long story short, things got very, very mucked up when she was doing it. And now she's paying quite a large amount of money per month for a bookkeeper. So that, so she said she always thought that there were no other options other than things like bookkeepers or QuickBooks. So when you started talking about Bake Diary, she said, can Bake Diary really do what QuickBook does with my accounting? I can then hand that info over to my accountant at tax time. So she's worried that it, for £6 a month, it wasn't going to do what she needed it to do.
But I believe that yes, it can do everything you need. I can put my expenses on it. I can put my mileage on it. My the petrol, your supplies. You can do your invoicing on it. I do everything on it, and then I just hand it over to my accountant.
Your accountant. So
and I think she has her own login as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You can link. There is a facility to link your bank account as well, which I haven't done because I think I have to pay more for my bank, and I'm all about the not spending the money. And I quite, that's one of my favourite jobs is entering the receipts because I feel like I'm a post office. You know,
you feel like a grown up.
And so I quite enjoy that. But I think this lady was talking about dollars, wasn't she?
Yeah, she's in America. Yeah.
Yes. So I had a look, and it, I think it was was it 37 countries? I can't remember, but there are lots of countries across the world that use it.
Perfect. So
not use it, or you can use it in that country.
Yeah. So I just thought that if Lisa is having this question, then there probably are other people that have got the same question. And the question is, and the answer is yes, you can use it, or Sammy is using it to go straight to her accountant with it. So I'm sure you can in other countries.
Yeah, I load all the information on there.
Yeah.
Everything. But you can also do cake designs on there. You can enter all your prices, you can do quotations on there.
Yeah.
I think it's brilliant. Absolutely.
But thank you to Lisa for getting in touch and asking
Lisa. Lisa.
And thank you for all your kind words to us. Always very appreciated.
L-I-S-A, Lisa.
If you want to have your name sung by Sammy, then please do get in touch. excuse me.
It's your doorbell.
It's my doorbell. It's all right. My husband's in. If you want your name to be sung by Sammy, then please get in touch and message us, and we will read out your message, and she will sing to you.
I'm not promising anything. But don't forget to like, review, subscribe, dance, wear glittery knickers, eat cake.
Wear what?
Glittery knickers or pants, whatever you like to wear. And just do it all. Yeah. Listen to us.
Just be wonderful.
Be happy. Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening. And we will see you next week.
Yeah. Ba 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 hi. Yeah. Do you put that laugh in?